And welcome in. It is the Doug Russell Podcast. A lot to get to today. Glad to have you along for the ride. We'll have a full Badgers basketball preview of their opening round game against North Carolina in the NCAA tournament. Also, we'll hit the Wayback Machine with one of our favorites. We'll visit Chicago to see what our friends in the Windy City are saying about their new star quarterback. And we'll wonder, where is the love for the NBA's best? First up, of course, our socials. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Doug Russell Pod. You can drop us an email. Love to hear from you. It is DougRussellPod@gmail.com. You can also search for us on Facebook and on YouTube. And for all of that in one very convenient place, you can also download all of our episodes for free. Very simple. DougRussellPod.com. Again, DougRussellPod.com. Let's start in Philadelphia.
Number one in the league for game, man. Philadelphia fifth.
He's due
for three.
He's due. Had knocked one down all night long.
Jim Paschke and Marcus Johnson on the call. The Bucks claw from behind to beat the 76ers in overtime, 109-105. The first half was a bricklayer fest for the Bucks. They shot 12 of 45. That's 26.7% from the field. They only scored 31 points by halftime. Also, two-time MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo, he only had 4 points before the intermission. The Bucks were awful on Wednesday night at Philadelphia in the first half. But after halftime, something clicked. There's a reason that they don't award the win or the loss after 24 minutes, but rather 48, sometimes more. Last night was more. In the third quarter, the Bucks made 13 of 26 from the field. That's shooting 50%. That is much better than 26%. I wasn't a math major. I do know that. Giannis hit 4 of his 6 shots. That was in the third quarter. They were trailing still by 9 after three quarters, though, and the Bucks came out on fire in that final fourth quarter. They tied the ball game at 78-78. That was with 8:41 left, and they treaded water from there on. Looks like they ran out of gas maybe just a little bit. Both teams weren't playing with a full roster. Of course, Joel Embiid out for several weeks because of the knee injury. The Bucks, they made a trade. They traded DJ Wilson, DJ Augustine, and Torrey Craig. They didn't have any of those players available. They were dealt in separate deals. Wilson and Augustine headed to the Rockets. PJ Tucker coming back to the Bucks. Veteran presence, someone who hasn't played that well this season. He's 35 years old, but he can be a shooter, he can be a defender, and he can be another veteran presence on a team. This isn't a very young team. We'll put it that way for the Bucks. I mean, they've got some older guys that are being counted on to help push this team toward a championship, and PJ Tucker is part of that. I talk about chips in the middle of the table all the time. PJ Tucker, I don't know if he's going to be the guy that puts the Bucks over the top. Giannis Antetokounmpo is a player that puts a team over the top. James Harden for the Brooklyn Nets, that's a type of player that can push that team over the top. But PJ Tucker could be an important member of the Milwaukee Bucks the rest of the way. As for the game, as for the overtime, by the way, Giannis, he made all 4 of his shots from the field. He scored a game-high 32 points. 10 of them came in the 5-minute overtime period. Remember, 4 points in the first half, 10 points in overtime for Giannis. 109-105, the score. The Bucks pulled within a game and a half of the Sixers for first place in the East. We've talked about it on the podcast before. I'm not necessarily concerned with where the Bucks finish in the regular season. It's been pretty overblown the last couple of years where the Bucks have had the best record in the NBA. How much good did that do them when the playoffs rolled around? Well, at least 2 years ago, they got to the Eastern Conference Finals. That was that big incremental step that we were all waiting for them to take after this was a team that consistently, year after year after year, if they would get to the playoffs, they get bounced in the first round. So then they get to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you think, all right, the next step, NBA Finals. Well, it didn't happen. They got bounced in the second round by the Miami Heat, and that kind of made the Bucks look inward. And I think they needed to look inward. I think they needed to get a little bit tougher. And hopefully PJ Tucker is part of that getting tougher part for the Bucks as they move forward. Now, I want to talk about Giannis for a second. What do you want from your MVP? You want them to do everything. You want them to be leaders, and you want them to be clutch. This was the biggest game in the NBA last night. This is a possible playoff preview. I know Joel Embiid was not in the game. I understand that. But what do you want from your MVPs? You want them to be clutch in big games. Again, in overtime, Giannis making all four of his shots from the field, scored 10 points of his game-high 32. He took over that extra frame. The Bucks scored 16 points in overtime. Giannis had 10 of them. I know that he won't win a third straight MVP. Voter fatigue is real. But he shouldn't be overlooked. What more do you want from an MVP candidate than what you saw on the floor last night from Giannis Antetokounmpo? So what did Giannis want? Apparently after the game, he just wanted dinner.
Not going to lie, I was a little surprised to see you not with a cheesesteak, given what the last week has been.
Somebody grab me one, please. Hey, give me the steak one with the mushroom and cheese, American cheese, please.
In Philly, they call that whiz whip.
Give me the... This is the whiz whiz? I got the whiz whiz. Whiz whiz?
Yeah, not
whiz whiz. That doesn't sound right to me, though.
Whiz
whiz.
Whiz
whiz. Whiz whiz. Whiz whiz. Okay. That doesn't sound right to me. That sounds like it's kind of shaky, you know what I'm saying?
I suppose when you're winning, you can have all the Philly cheesesteaks you can handle. Giannis gets all the Philly cheesesteaks. Whatever he wants. He put that in his deal. He should put that in that Supermax deal of his. Getting back to what I was saying a minute ago about Giannis and the MVP race. If Michael Jordan never won three in a row, which he deserved to do, Giannis probably isn't going to win three in a row. The last guy to do it was Larry Bird. I mean, and there have only been a small handful of players that have done that. Kareem never won three in a row. It's almost impossible to do. Again, voter fatigue is real. And the fact that the Bucks have failed in the playoffs the last 2 years kills his candidacy. But if you look at this season, Giannis, he's not near the top of anyone's list when it comes to the MVP race. It's Embiid, it's Nikola Jokic, LeBron James, Dame Lillard, Luka Doncic. These are the guys that are the top of everybody's list. Steph Curry is on some lists. Kawhi Leonard is even an outlier on a couple of lists. So is James Harden. Giannis is kind of hanging in there in the top 10, but that's about it. But if you look at the numbers, again, he does everything that you want an MVP to do on both sides of the floor. He's not only the reigning MVP, don't forget, he's the reigning defensive player of the year. He's been all defense, what, the last 3-4 years? Right now, Giannis is fifth in the NBA in scoring. Bradley Beal, followed by Dame Lillard, Joel Embiid, Steph Curry, and then Giannis. That's a pretty good list, by the way. You look at rebounds per game, and the only player that is on the top five list on both scoring and rebounding, of course, is Giannis. Giannis is fourth in the NBA in rebounds per game. Clint Capella, Rudy Gobert, they're the top two guys, but, you know, Dame Lillard, obviously, I mean, he's a point guard. He's not going to get those rebounds. Joel Embiid, though, he's nowhere near the list, the top five as far as rebounds per game. So he does that. He's 11th in the league in shooting percentage. He's shooting 56.3% from the field. You know, if you want to look at some other metrics, 12th in blocks, 21st in assists. There's a lot of players in the NBA. He's 21st in the NBA in assists per game. My point is, he's near the top in every statistic on both ends of the floor. The Bucks are next in action Saturday night at home against the San Antonio Spurs. We told you about Andy Dalton signing with the Bears a couple of days ago. Of course, the Chicago Bears doing what the Chicago Bears do. They had pursued Russell Wilson. They wanted the guy who threw 40 touchdown passes a year ago. Who wouldn't? But instead of getting Russell Wilson, they settle on Andy Dalton. So how's that going over on Chicago Sports Talk Radio?
And then, so Nick Foles fails, let's bring in another guy that we're familiar with, and we're going to bring in Andy Dalton, and it just makes you not want to be a Bears fan. This is all this is. This is a complete running into the wall move. It is to the land of nowhere. It is the roadmap that doesn't have a destination. We are here, and we are fooling everybody, and we're going to try and sell you on this, that we think we know what we're doing.
Waddle and Sylvie really taking it well on ESPN 1000. It's become a cottage industry in Wisconsin. Every time the Bears do something stupid, you listen to Chicago Sports Talk Radio because it is absolutely delicious. I had a boss one time who, we would say it on the air after the Bears had done something stupid or played a terrible game, that just check out 670 The Score or check out ESPN 1000. He got so mad at us. Don't ever tell anybody to not listen to insert station here. I won't say which one it was. Just got infuriated every time we did that. Don't ever tell anybody to not listen to, you know, www, whatever, you know, the station was. And he wasn't from here. The general manager wasn't from here, and the program director wasn't from here. They just didn't understand. That's something that we do in Wisconsin. So anytime the Bears just biff a game or get Andy Dalton as opposed to Russell Wilson, yeah, you know what? You get a pass from listening to Wisconsin Sports Talk Radio. Go listen to Chicago Sports Talk Radio if you're a Packers fan, because nothing, and I promise you nothing, will entertain you more. Moving on to college hoops. Of course, coming up on Friday night, it is a 6:10 tip-off at a place where the Badgers haven't played very well, but at least it's not Purdue on the other side. It'll be the North Carolina Tar Heels, a team where there are some common opponents, but the Badgers haven't necessarily played their best basketball down the stretch. Joining us from Madison, he's a senior writer at Badger Blitz. He has been on the podcast before. He's been on my radio shows before as well. We welcome in Jay Kokorowski to the Doug Russell Podcast. Jake, appreciate the time. It is the best time of year, at least as far as I'm concerned, and I'm so grateful that we actually have an NCAA tournament to talk about this year.
I agree. This is great. Thankful that it's going on. Thankful for the protocols that are in place to have this go on. And thankful for just, yeah, for this is a small step of normalcy. Yeah, everything is in Indianapolis this year, but hey, it's better than what was there last year when, you know, everything was canceled and obviously never was rescheduled. So this is fun. I know Wisconsin maybe has not achieved what many thought it could be. We're a top 10, top 15 team, but I still think this team, when they play well, could be up there, could challenge anybody, and it's going to be fun to see. It's going to be fun to watch.
I've always said this about the NCAA seating committee. They always at least have shown a sense of humor about certain things. I mean, for example, they've set it up so where if Loyola gets through the first round, their likely opponent is Illinois. So that's going to be fun for fans, you know, south of the border. I don't know how much humor they were displaying when they decided to put the Badgers at Mackey Arena, of all places. Now, on one hand, it's certainly a place that they're familiar with, but all of the memories are bad at Mackey Arena. What was that all about?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of, yeah, 4-42, if I'm not mistaken, at Mackey. They don't play Purdue, so that's positive, right?
Yeah.
So, that. Yeah, there is that. But, yeah, it's going to be it's I don't know if I agree with the seeding of being a 9. Now, granted, I will say this. Wisconsin did not, I mean, with some, those games, I mean, they could have closed out Iowa a couple times. They've, you know, they could have done a lot more in that last stretch to help improve their resume, and they didn't. Obviously, I thought they played a lot better than what they had been, you know, in most of February over the last, you know, couple of weeks. But it will be interesting, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do against North Carolina, which I don't think, part of it, I think, is a good matchup. Part of it, I don't think, and I know we'll get into that in a little bit, but it is, it's kind of, yeah, like I said, humorous that way. And of course, when you're a 9 seed, and if one does beat the 8 seed, guess what you got right next there? You got Baylor, who would score, you know, scores about 85 points a game and has three players that are averaging over 14 points per contest. So it's going to be very, it's not an easy road for the Badgers this year.
Well, it hasn't been an easy road for them all season long from the standpoint of their league schedule. And, you know, they talked about it briefly when they were doing the selection show. I think it was Clark Kellogg who said, yeah, the Badgers had the sixth hardest schedule in the country this season. And, you know, you look at this brutal down the stretch run that they had against Iowa, against Illinois. Purdue was ranked when they played them. They had to play Michigan the last couple of weeks of the season. And granted, all of those games against all of those ranked teams, the Badgers lost to, but they did play teams like even Iowa. They played Iowa tough. They played Purdue tough. They played Illinois really tough. They almost came back and beat Illinois, for crying out loud, back on February 27th. How much can that brutal last week, albeit the final scores weren't what the Badgers wanted to be, but it's not like they were getting blown out either. How much can that help them in this tournament?
I think it's significant to the point where you have the old adage, iron sharpens iron, right? So you have, you mentioned it, you lose, you know, the team loses to number three at the time, Michigan, number 11, Iowa, number five, Illinois. They play tough in Mackey Arena against number 23, Purdue, to only come back and lose, you know, 5 days later to number five, Iowa. And that, you know, within that stretch, I mean, they only won one out of those six games before the Big Ten tournament. So it was a rough stretch for them, but they're also playing very tough teams. Nine Big Ten conference programs made it into the NCAA tournament. So I'm guessing because they've played so many Big Ten teams, you know, in the past couple months, they want to see other teams from other conferences, you know? And so I think North Carolina is a tough, I would say, matchup for them, especially on the rebounding side, and the fact of how well the Tar Heels, especially on the offensive boards, can grab them and get second chance points. But I think it can help Wisconsin, where they've been battle tested, and it could be something where they could make a run if they can put those pieces together. And you saw good signs. You know, you said, you know, against, you know, even against Illinois at home, you know, where they only lost by five, but Purdue, Iowa, and then, you know, they beat Penn State. Was Penn State was tough because of their, what they did, you know, with their defense and just the steals and just how the Nittany Lions played, you know, at the end of the year. But even, you know, again, playing against Iowa on the 12th, it's, you know, you saw signs that this team can break through. It's just a matter of, can they play defense and offense consistently for a full 40 minutes? And if they do, they're top 10, top 15 team, in my opinion. I think probably more top 10. And you saw what they can do, over the course of this year. But, you know, it's going to be tough. But you hope that conference schedule has allowed them to say, hey, you know, if you're Wisconsin, hey, we played the best of the best. We played in the toughest conference. We can go toe-to-toe with anybody. Now, in an NCAA tournament against these other conferences, they have a shot to prove it.
You mentioned the nine teams from the Big Ten, obviously a 14-team league, but nine teams out of the 14 getting into the NCAA tournament, which is impressive, no question. But I think I'm more impressed by, of the top eight teams, the number one or number two seeds, half of that is occupied by the Big Ten. There's two number one seeds and two number two seeds in this tournament. Have you ever, in all the time that you've covered college basketball and covered the Big Ten Conference, have you ever seen a conference that dominant in any one particular season?
Not really. I'll preface it by saying I really started covering college basketball probably, this is 2017-2018 season for the Badgers, where they'd missed the NCAA tournament for the first time in, what, 20-some-odd years, it felt like. I will preface it by saying that I haven't covered the team on a beat level, for that long. But, you know, obviously watching college basketball for years, being a UW graduate and being there for the early course of the Bo Ryan years and seeing what Ryan and the program has had to go through with the Big Ten and being strong in the conference for so long. I mean, this is still really impressive, and I really I enjoyed watching Big Ten basketball this year because there are so many good teams. And you know, I really enjoy Illinois. I know my buddy Chris, who lives here in Madison, I'm sure he'll love me saying that because he's an Illinois alum. But you just see what, you know, Ayo Dosunmu can do, Kofi Coburn, you know, future NBA players. And Ayo is just phenomenal. To me, he is just what he can do. He's got, you know, how he can be so clutch, just what he's done. For you know, for Brad Underwood's program is sensational, and I'm excited to watch what he does at the next level. Same thing with Kofi, for that matter. But you know, you have Michigan, which I know that, you know, they're missing Isaiah Livers, and that's rough. You know, with him, or I think they're saying he's sidelined, right? But you also have, you know, Ohio State and Iowa, which you have Luka Garza, you know, National Player of the Year candidate, and you obviously the Badger fans have seen him firsthand. With what they do, you know, I'm naming all these big names, but even just the supporting cast for Illinois, when Ayo was out, you know, stepped up huge. And I think they have a good young nucleus going forward after he leaves. You have Iowa, which, you know, they have Luka, but you also have, you know, Joe Wieskamp, who played very well against Wisconsin. You also have, you know, just, you know, Jordan Bohannon, who's a clutch free throw shooter as well as a 3-point specialist. You have all these, you know, players that, you know, that serve roles, and that's what's just fun about this. This is the strongest league that I've seen in a while, and it's fun to watch. And you know, it's gonna be just how. I mean, obviously, it's gonna be measured by who wins the national title. I think obviously everyone looks at that, but to see how far, you know, these teams go is going to be a big storyline for the conference to show just the supremacy of just what they can bring to college basketball going forward.
Going into the season, the Badgers looked like they were, if they weren't going to be the best team in the Big Ten, at least they had the advantage of being the most experienced team in the league. You're bringing back Demetric Trice, Micah Potter for a full season, Brad Davison, Aleem Ford, Nate Reavers. I mean, these are all guys that Big Ten fans are familiar with. What happened to, I mean, I can ask specifically, I guess, about Reavers. He seems like he took a step back this season. But this was a team that was supposed to be better than 10-10 in league play. I know they missed a lot of shots. Does it go a lot deeper than just some nights they were cold?
I don't know how deep it goes. I mean, the one thing, too, and, you know, we've seen other traditional powers like Michigan State or Duke or Kentucky, obviously not living up to, you know, maybe their national expectations of being those basketball blue bloods there. With Wisconsin, it's just, I think it's really just been the option at key moments, or not, you know, key defensive lapses at times where even let's go back to their last game they played against the Hawkeyes. They were, you know, you saw what they did, you know, for a half. They're, you know, they're playing tight. I mean, they played tight the entire game, but you saw Iowa start grabbing offensive rebounds. I remember at one point in the second half, just a little over halfway through, I thought I tweeted out, Iowa had 8 offensive rebounds, which gave them second chance opportunities, you know, where they had defensive stops, but then Iowa grabbed the offensive board and it gave them another, you know, fresh shot clock to have a chance to score more points. And that was huge. So you've seen stuff like that. You've seen, I mean, the poor shooting's been really rough where you have, in my opinion, you have Demetric Trice and you have Jonathan Davis, who can create their own shots really well. And you saw Trice, especially with those 19 points, you know, I forgot which game it was, but you saw him light it up as well. I think it's just the inconsistencies with this team of at times, you know, shooting well, but then they go cold, or defensively just giving up some possessions that they shouldn't, and putting points on the scoreboard that, you know, they'd normally, you know, maybe we haven't seen from teams in the past. So it's, you know, plus you're also playing in a pandemic. And so, you know, that's where I don't mean to use that as a fault by any stretch, but, you know, trying to play in this type of environment where, you know, things are different, schedules are different. You know, in my opinion, I feel like it could alter some things where, you know, it's a different time that we're living in at the moment, until things get back to some form of quote unquote normalcy. But you know, I would just honestly, I just point, you know, the shooting's been rough, for Wisconsin, and that's been a big one. And then at times it's the defense, and the rebounding has been tough on that end. So, you know, but like I said, if they can put that all together, which, I mean, like I said, this is a clean slate. This is one and done now. and Wisconsin has a chance to prove itself. And I think, you know, this team with who came back and the senior leadership that's there, if they can put things together with shooting, get hot, make those stops on defense, which we've seen, you know, this year at times, I think Wisconsin has a good shot to play with anybody. And the key is just now more of a, for us as part of the media, as reporters, Doug, is just now that it's, you know, we've seen glimpses. Now it's, well, show me everything, you know, show me putting it all together. Right. And so that's where I'm, you know, I'm always optimistic. I'm a natural optimist. You know, I'm always one that I believe people have, you know, and players have the ability, you know, to do what, you know, the best they can. I still think this team can be very formidable. Now it's just a matter of, I think, you know, what we've seen over the course of this season. Well, now it's time to show me.
Well, and that starts on Friday night at Mackey Arena against North Carolina. There are two common opponents that the Badgers and the Tar Heels have, both Marquette and Iowa. The Badgers, of course, lost to both of those teams. So did North Carolina, and they were, granted, they were at different times of the season. And for Marquette, I think that's probably the highlight of their season when they went in there on February 24th and whipped North Carolina. You know, the Tar Heels aren't a bad program by any stretch of the imagination. 18-10 overall, 10-6 in the ACC. And the ACC is still a tough conference, not as tough as the Big Ten and not as tough as we're used to seeing from the ACC. But as you see it, how much, two-part question, how much do you think that they can glean from those two common opponent games that they, you know, all lost collectively to, went 0-4 or 0-5, I guess, against 0-5 or 0-6, I guess, when you count the Big Ten tournament for Wisconsin. And from that, how do the Badgers match up against the Tar Heels overall, you know, from, you know, a player-by-player perspective?
You know, when it comes to just looking at common opponents, I mean, I know you called it out where it is, to me, it's tough where you see, I mean, to me, I feel like these teams are very, you know, I guess with their resumes or whatnot, or just how they, you know, played against common opponents. There are some things that you can take away. I guess the one thing I took away from, like, both teams lost to Marquette, and you know, Wisconsin, that was their fourth, I'm not mistaken, their first loss of the year. And it was one where they played them tight, and they're on the road technically.
That was a 2-point game.
Yeah, 2-point game. And it came down to a tip in with, you know, 67-65, it was tip in with, you know, less than a second left. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, North Carolina, you know, it was a little different story. And that was in, I mean, Wisconsin played them in December, and then you had, before, you know, in 2020. And then I'm just taking a look real quick to see when exactly they played Marquette. It was February 24th.
Yeah, it was
so
late
a little
in
bit
the
later.
Season. Yeah, much later.
And that was a road law, you know, that was a road win for Marquette.
Yeah, that was in Chapel Hill.
So, you know, for that, I kind of glean off of that. I'm like, that's interesting. And even just looking at that box score for Marquette and North Carolina, I mean, you know, they're shooting, you know, Marquette was 52% from the field. And that included, you know, hitting, you know, they made 16 of their 20 free throws. North Carolina had a poor game shooting where they shot only, you know, less than 42%. And, you know, they only made 68% of their free throws too. So I think that plays a huge role there. You're looking at, you know, I think Wisconsin can win this game. But you look at kind of how I'm viewing it, and a lot of people have talked about this already. You know, Ben Wargle, one of our other senior writers at BadgerBlitz.com, he's written about it, where, you know, rebounding is going to be key. And you take a look right off the bat, and you're just looking at, you know, North Carolina's game notes, which I've been studying them on the past couple of days, just to kind of take a look and see. I mean, right off the bat, you know, Carolina leads the nation in offensive rebounding, which is, they're nearly 16 per contest. They're third in total rebounds per game at 43, and they have three players already, two starters and a reserve that are technically a normal reserve, I should say, that are averaging at least 6.8 rebounds per contest too. And we've seen, yeah, I referenced the Iowa game, you know, for the Big Ten tournament quarterfinal. You know, I referenced that before, where the offensive rebounds hurt Wisconsin that second half, where those second chance opportunities popped up. You look at what Carolina's doing; they're averaging almost 17 points for second chance points, I should say, this season too. And I'm looking at another stat too. Carolina, this is just straight from the game notes, you know, from the Tar Heels. Sure. Leads the nation in offensive rebound percentage, you know, 41.3% of its own missed shots. So that's, it, which is, by the way, interesting too, because Carolina also points out in this note that Baylor's fourth. So if Wisconsin somehow gets past the Tar Heels, they're going to go up against Baylor. Hey, guess what? That's a fun stat there. So you have, Wisconsin needs to rebound. I'm not saying win the rebounding battle. I mean, you want obviously to, if you're Wisconsin, you want to win the rebounding battle. If Wisconsin wins the rebounding battle against North Carolina, they're moving on. But we've seen just how dominant North Carolina be. And Micah Potter mentioned it in player availability yesterday, talking about how, getting all five players to rebound as well. If, a couple of the big guys can't grab it, if they're boxing out or whatnot, can't get to it, the trajectory of it, having other players rebound as well. And I think that's going to be huge. You also have, I think shooting wise, it all goes down in the post where, North Carolina's got some, bigs where, they have, if I'm not mistaken, Greg Gard mentioned it too, where they have a couple of big guys that are there that are starters. I think they're like 6'10 and above. So, we may see, and it was referenced, yesterday, we may see something along the lines of like having Nate Reavers and Micah Potter back in the starting lineup together, where they're together and they're working through it. We haven't seen that a lot because obviously the Big Ten has utilized smaller lineups where they don't necessarily have those two big guys that are, starting and whatnot. So we've seen either Reavers or Potter start, and then you have someone like Tyler Wahl who's come in and Tyler's about 6'8", 6'9", and he can guard 1 through 4 really on those positions on the floor. So it'll be interesting just to see, like, we don't know exactly, what the lineup will be but it's one of those things too where, Greg said it right off the bat. I'm reading off of Ben's article. We've talked about that and worked with that. It's definitely a possibility in terms of bringing back both of those players, in a starting role. I think one thing to watch out for as well is just the fouls down low too. If one of those guys gets into foul trouble, how will that influence, rebounding down the road or whatnot, or in that game, and just how lineups can affect how that plays out. And then, if I'm mistaken, I believe Carolina may have a 10-man rotation too. So if that's the case, I know Gard was asked about it yesterday, that could play a role too, where Wisconsin's about eight, we've consistently seen about eight players deep that have made, where you have your normal five, but then it's been either Potter, you have Trevor Anderson, and then Jonathan Davis coming off the bench ever since, Ben Carlson, he hasn't played in quite a while. I think it's been the Marquette game since the last time he played. So, to me, those are some of the big things that I think are big for this game coming up. I also look at this too, where North Carolina maybe, in my opinion, down low and, they're hitting, 44% of their total free, field goals, but their 3-point percentage, they may have someone like Kerwin Walton, who, guard reference too, where, he played on the same AAU team as, from Minnesota, as a couple other Badgers, but, he's hit 41.5% of his three pointers, but the rest of the team, the team as a total is shooting under 32% from deep. So we've seen Wisconsin, when they can get hot, I think they could take advantage there. But opposing teams are shooting just under 35% from beyond the arc for the Tar Heels. So I think, Wisconsin can make those deep three, make those shots deep, which we've seen. I still think they need to get inside on posts and get those, try to get layups, try to work the inside more, and whatnot. But if they can, if they need to start shooting from deep, if they can hit those shots from beyond the arc, Wisconsin's got a great chance. But, it's just a matter of putting that ball through the hoop and making a count there.
Long-term question beyond this year's tournament, however far Wisconsin gets or not, how concerned should Badgers fans be about the 2021-22 season, considering that Trice, Potter, Davison, Ford, Reavers, they're all seniors. They're all gone. How deep is this team, and how much do they have the ability to turn the page on this season and then get guys that are ready for Big Ten play when next season rolls around?
Right, and there is that blanket year of eligibility where some could come back. Yeah, right. And nothing's been official. I mean, I know reporters have tried to talk you know, here and there the past few weeks about, well, have, you know, talking to players, have you thought about the decision yet? And we, you know, we haven't gotten far on that at all. And I, you know, we won't know anything official for any of the players till coming back. Though, if they are seniors, I mean, you talk about the six seniors that are there, you know, depending upon who would come back, which there are so many different factors, right? Where one, playing professionally, two, you know, and having that chance, and you know, also grad school work or whatnot, where, you know, I don't know how many grad school, you know, how many grad schools you can apply or how many master's degrees you can get, but you know, you have a few of those players that are already in master's programs as we speak, right? So with all that being said, it's with kind of the unknowns of what will take place there, I still like what could be there if Ben Carlson can return to form. Now, him missing games, like, I thought he was playing really well. Him and Jonathan Davis, I should say, that's how he likes to be referred to as. Jonathan Davis, you know, obviously, I think next year will take a huge leap forward even more, and you've seen that potential, making steals, playing great defense, pulling down timely boards, especially on the offensive end. And whatnot. And I think, you know, his shot will improve. I think he'll have more opportunities next year. You know, you will need to see, you know, I think Tyler Wahl too, you know, you've seen him shine at times this year in the starting role, pulling down some offensive rebounds. I think he still needs to work a little bit more on his shot, but he's been working to improve that. But he also is great down low in the post and doing some spin moves, etc., getting down to the paint and scoring down there. But, you know, you hope Carlson could be that, you know, can make some progression there heading into, you know, his second year. But it will be, you mentioned it, there will be questions to answer, especially in the backcourt. If Trice and Davison and Anderson all decide to say, okay, you know, it's time for me to, you know, move on. I mean, those are three key guards, four guard, no pun intended, I promise you, on that. But it will be interesting just to see how it all plays out with that. You know, I mean, I know, you know, for this 2021 class that's coming up, you have someone like Chucky Hepburn, who just finished out. He lost the state championship game in Nebraska, but he put on a display in that title game where, you know, I forgot if he was near triple double watch, but he tried carrying that team to the you know, state championship there. But he's electric. And I, you know, in my opinion, with just the depth that we see there, or lack of, maybe lack of, in my heart, like, I feel that, you know, Hepburn could be getting a lot, some minutes there. Matthew Moores, who in South Dakota is one of the all-time great players in you know, state history for, you know, in that state itself. He's played varsity basketball since he was in seventh grade, which is very, you know, intriguing there. And you have, you know, so those are two big names there. And I'm just, you know, there will be questions just to see how the rotation fills out and just what members of that, you know, 2020 class, you know, not just Jonathan Davis or Ben Carlson, but can Steven Crowell, you know, jump in more and assert himself more as a, you know, as a four or five, you know, he's more of a center. Do you see others stepping up, like, you know, even Jordan Davis, the twin brother of Jonathan, who, you know, was in high school. I thought it was a really good, you know, really good defensively. You know, can he provide that here at Wisconsin in the second year, and you know, how will you affect the offense on that end? So you mentioned, like I said, there are a lot of, you know, there's, you know, even Lauren Bowman, who, you know, we talked, you know, he took a leave of absence according to the program back, was it earlier, you know, in the season, and he, you know, now it looks like he will, I'm not mistaken, return to, I think he's going to return to campus coming up. I'm taking a look right now, just making sure. Don't mind me. I know we're,
it's all good. Podcasting. Hey, you know, it's, you know, a podcast, yes, man. This is, you know, as I've said to you before, we go as long as you want to go.
No, I appreciate it. I appreciate that. But no, even just like Lauren Bowman, who, you know, they're expecting to have him back in Madison. He's more of a point guard too. So you have Chucky Hepburn, who's a point guard. You have Lauren Bowman, who's a point guard, in my eyes. And, you know, and UW had, you know, back earlier this month, you know, saying, you know, we're looking forward to having Lauren Bowman back with the team. He's a valuable part of a program, and we are anticipating his return in June. That was what a Wisconsin official told us, and I think it's basically the same wording as a bunch of other media outlets too. Granted, so if Bowman can come back too, who, you know, his high school coach, when I talked to his high school coach last spring, gushed about him. I think he can be a, you know, he can lead, you know, lead the team down the court. Obviously I think he's good defensively, but if you can get Bowman and Hepburn going, I think that, that there's young talent there. You may, with any young player who hasn't seen the court in college basketball, it could take some time, but it'll be a different look for this team. And the one thing that's been, you know, what Gard wanted first and foremost was to get a bunch of players in this 2020 class the experience to work with some of these seniors to see how the Wisconsin, you know, how they've done it with the program. And so they've been able to learn from, even with some, maybe some altered schedules or whatever has happened because of the pandemic, they've been able to learn from this outgoing class of seniors. And you know, you, one would hope if you're in the program that some of that, you know, the, you know, what, the, whatever, you know, what this team has done previously, or just how this program has been run previously, like it's transferred over to this, these younger players. And you see that consistency continue with making, you know, being a force in the Big Ten and being, you know, consistent in getting to the NCAA tournament that continues down the line.
Have you filled out a bracket yet?
I haven't yet. I mean, I've been starting to like with my boys in school. It's been interesting just to see how I've been looking, and I've been trying to figure out. I got to do one because I my buddy, as I mentioned, my buddy Chris is the one that's the big Illinois guy. You know, he's got a bracket, so I got to figure. He's got a little tournament thing going on, so I got to fill that out. But I'm really intrigued. I mean, I'm a big Illinois. Like I said, I'm a big Illinois fan, so I feel that they're going to go far. I think they could be in the national title game. I think Gonzaga could be really good too. Obviously, you know, we've seen what, you know, what they can do. And Jalen, I got a chance to watch Jalen Suggs when he was in high school last year, last February, when him and Jonathan and Jordan Davis, they all went, when La Crosse Central took on Minnehaha Academy, and that was fun. And I think Jalen Suggs is a very talented and special player that'll do great things in the NBA too. So I think, you know, it could be Gonzaga. I think it could be Illinois. It's going to be a lot. Like I said, this is, to me, it's fun, and the boys have off of school on Friday, so I can like send them downstairs with video games, and I can just like, I'm gonna have like three or four screens up in my living room.
There you go.
And we'll figure out how to go, where to go from there.
All right, so my bracket, which is going to be kindling, I've said by 7 o'clock on Saturday night. I haven't posted it up on our social media yet, but I will. Yeah, hopefully, it'll be up by the time this is posted. But you can find us on Twitter at Doug Russell Pod, as well as on Instagram at Doug Russell Pod. But I've got Iowa beating Baylor in the national championship game. I do like Illinois. They're in the Final Four. They're going to lose in my bracket to Baylor, which means they'll probably beat Baylor. And then I've also got Iowa against Alabama. So it's Iowa, Bama, Illinois, and Baylor in my Final Four. I don't have Gonzaga because it's the tournament, and we've, Gonzaga has done this to us so many times before. Until they can make their breakthrough, I'm not giving them credit to getting to the Final Four yet, even though I think that they're the best team in the country. But then again, I don't know that they're the most tested team in the country. I think every team that comes out of the Big Ten, and I've got half of them, half of the Final Four bracket from the Big Ten, that's the most tested league, in my opinion. And I would be surprised if a team from another league, you know, can really get past them. If like Iowa, Illinois, Michigan, they're all great teams, and I think anything could happen with this tournament. I think that's one of the great things about it. I do have Wisconsin beating North Carolina, but I do have them losing to Baylor though as well.
That's so absolutely fair. I mean, when you have a team like Baylor, where I started looking at some, you know, facts just even today before we joined up on the podcast, just they're shooting nearly 50% from the field to begin, you know, for the entire season. And whatnot. And, you know, they're shooting for almost 42% from deep. So, I mean, that's the sign of a good team. And for that matter, I mean, they're only allowing, you know, they're only allowing 66 points per game for opposing defenses. So, I mean, Baylor's just, we've seen throughout the season just how strong they've been. It'll be interesting to see just how, you know, I'm excited just to see, you mentioned the Big Ten, this, I want to see just if they can, if that conference, you know, dominance is asserted early on and often, but I think, you know, it's gonna be fun to watch.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, cannot wait. Jay Kokorowski from Badger Blitz, what do you got going on over at Badger Blitz?
Oh, we got a lot going on here obviously with the NCAA tournament. Make sure badgerblitz.com or wisconsin.rivals.com, where we'll have, obviously, you know, we'll talk about the game coming up, leading up to Friday night. And obviously, if Wisconsin advances, we'll talk about Baylor and what, you know, what to expect from those two teams there. If not, well, we'll talk about the season that was, where big expectations, you know, if they do exit in the first round were not met after a huge end of the year last season. But spring football is coming up down the road. Wisconsin starts on March 30th, so we'll have some position previews leading up to that. We also, obviously, with recruiting, some of the alternate spring season for programs, for football programs within the state, you know, John McNamara, the lead recruiting analyst and editor of Badger Blitz, along with myself, we're hoping to get out to some football games heading up later this month and in April. So, you know, Wisconsin's got, you know, Jackson Acker, the who's, you know, a running, listed as a running back for Wisconsin, even though Joe Rudolph mentioned he had some position flexibility. He's basically 10 minutes from my house over in Verona, which is just southwest of Madison. So I'm hoping to get out there to catch them. You know, there's obviously down in Illinois, you know, Brian Sanborn, who's the younger brother of Jack Sanborn. They're playing this spring, so John's hoping to get down there. And obviously up in Fond du Lac, Braylon Allen, who if y'all haven't had a chance to see his online work or his workout videos on Twitter or Instagram, I mean, he's like a 17-year-old that, you know, already seems like he's well beyond his years in the weight room and, you know, physically. And so it'd be interesting to see just what he could bring, not just for the spring season for Fond du Lac, but just down the road for Wisconsin, you know, when he comes to Madison, because he reclassified from the 22 class to the 21 class. So it really, there's a lot going on. It'll be a lot of fun to, you know, we got a lot of things going on coming up this spring, and we're really excited to bring it to you on BadgerBlitz.com.
Definitely. BadgerBlitz.com. Check it out. Check out Jake Kokorowski's Twitter feed at Jake Coco, JakeKoCo. He's a senior writer for Badger Blitz. Jake, I appreciate the time as always. Go Badgers. Great time of the year. We have basketball. Sports is coming back. I got my first lawn treatment today earlier. you know, so things are starting to turn around. And, you know, with the snow melting and everything, it's a great time of year. And I appreciate the time of the insights.
Oh, my pleasure. You know what? I hear you on the home stuff right now. I just like did some spring cleaning behind our dryer, you know, cleaning those duct vents and all that stuff. That was me earlier today too.
Good times.
And then, you know, even just, okay, real quick. Like I just took down my Christmas lights.
I did
literally
too.
2 weeks ago, a week ago. Cause they were frozen. I had ice dams in my gutters that were attached to the lights. So I had a legit excuse until everything melted.
We have floodlights. We have a green floodlight and a red floodlight. That's our Christmas lights. So we don't go that nuts, but we do have some like plug-in snowflakes that kind of adorn our walk coming up the driveway and whatnot. And they were buried in snow until a week and a half ago.
Yep.
Usually we get them out. I mean, look, I'm pretty maniacal about when it's January 1st, the Christmas lights go off because it's not Christmas season anymore. And I yank those suckers out. I have not been able to get them out because they've been buried in snow for the last 3 months.
Absolutely. And that's where I've been, where I like taking things down relatively quickly after the holiday, especially if there's no snow.
Yes.
But I also took it the extra notch where it was an extra step for me where I decorated our tree. We have like a nice little, I don't know what type of tree it is, but whatever. But I took lights on November because I was just bored, and with everything with the pandemic, I was like, I'm going to decorate this house really nicely. I didn't go full Clark Griswold on it with like the roof or anything like that. But what I did was I put the tree up, this tree, you know, that, and these lights just, it wasn't even the same like colored lights, where it wasn't like the multicolored lights. It was like each like different shade of white. And so it all looked a little different, but like I put up like five different, you know, branches, and it took me literally until last week to like do it because the snow just stopped everything, and I couldn't, you know, take my ladder and put it out there or else I'd have a safety hazard, which I don't want to hurt myself during this all. So yeah, anyways, birds of a feather and trying to get that all done, but happy that's done. Now it's on to spring cleaning and all that other fun stuff.
Spring cleaning and then spring football. So
exactly.
And I know that you guys will cover it like a blanket over there at Badger Blitz. Jake Kokorowski joining us here on the Doug Russell Podcast. Jake, my friend, I appreciate it so much. We'll talk again soon.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me on, Doug. Y'all be good. Stay healthy. Stay well. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, pal. You stay healthy as well. There he goes. Jake Kokorowski joining us here on the Doug Russell Podcast. As for the matchup itself, Badgers coach Greg Gard was asked his assessment of North Carolina. He was on this week on the statewide John Kuhn Show.
Well, it's probably not unknown, but North Carolina is number one in the country in offensive rebounding percentage. So they rebound about 41% of their misses, which is an astronomical number. I think they get over 10% of their points from the glass. from putbacks. So that's going to be a huge one. I think they just watching them, they've gone through a pause at times. They played Virginia right after a pause, and they looked like they had just come off pause in that game. But I think what you've watched, if you follow them, and I'm sure there's some closet North Carolina fans hanging out there somewhere in Wisconsin, but they've gotten better here down the stretch. They played well in the ACC tournament. They beat Florida State during the regular season. They lost to them in the semifinals. But they're a team you can tell is getting better and better. They're big. They're huge. They have four guys up front. They rotate through the front line. A really talented backcourt with Caleb Love, who was a McDonald's All-American. So a lot of talent there. And I think just much like we've all had to navigate the landmines with the pandemic, they have too. They've been shut down at least once and paused. So that disrupts your flow and disrupts your development. But I think right now they're playing as well as they've played all year.
As for the conference itself, Jay Kokorowski and I were talking about it. It's pretty stout.
Well, it's the best. I've been in the league almost 20 years, and those that have been in it longer, Izzo, Painter, said they've never seen it like this. So, I think the analytics bore that out. I mean, obviously the eye test and how you feel after in each game, I think proved that to the coaches, but the analytics that showed it was, the best in the last 25 years compared. I think there was a year of the Big 12 and the year of the ACC that this league passed this year. So it was, it was one after another. Obviously, that can take a toll. But again, what I try to remind is that ourselves and specifically our team, as we went through it, that look where everybody is. We routed through the third, fourth, and fifth ranked team in the country, five times, I think, in that span. So, we have to continue to get better. There's some, I thought we got better as the year went on. Maybe the results didn't show it. But like I said, this league is terrific. I think we got, a great chance to put some people to stay here for a while. Hopefully we're one of them, but, the top teams of this league, Illinois is terrific. They've really gotten better. Michigan, has kind of hit a little side spin right now, especially with the injury to Livers. But Ohio State and Iowa can obviously compete with anybody as well.
Tip-off on Friday night is set for 6:10. You can listen to it on my station in Milwaukee and Madison, 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee and 1310 WIBA in the capital city. And finally today, a trip into the Wayback Machine with one of my favorite people, former Milwaukee sportscaster. She was way back in the day with Channel 58, also with Fox Sports Wisconsin, covering the Brewers and the Bucks. She finished up her career in Wisconsin at WTMJ before moving out east. She's now at NBC Sports in Boston. She also has some national assignments around the Olympics. It was exactly 1 year ago, March 18th, 2020, when Tom Brady officially left the New England Patriots. Where he was headed, we didn't know. That he was going to win a Super Bowl with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, no one could have predicted that either. Sometimes I like to go back into the what were we talking about a year ago or 10 years ago or 15 years ago on certain anniversary dates. Well, this was exactly 1 year ago today because this was the story in sports on March 18th, 2020. So that leads me to my first question. We all know what's going on with the coronavirus and how much of a big story it is. But yesterday, specifically in the city of Boston, because you were there reporting on it, what was the bigger story, Brady or the virus?
Brady. So we did, and it shocked me a little bit just because it's been obviously a huge story, not just even locally or nationally, but worldwide. But yesterday when I woke up and checked my phone and I saw that there was a tweet that was posted 3 minutes prior to me waking up that Tom Brady was leaving, my first instinct was to get on the phone and say, how soon do you need me there? And they said, well, news already. We're in the same building as all of the NBC news properties in Boston. And they said, well, news is already on. We're going to, simulcast that. But as soon as you can get in, they were on, I believe, from around 8:45 in the morning until I think they finally went back to network programming at 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And the only breaks they took from Brady coverage were to go to coronavirus press conferences with the mayor of Boston and then President Trump. Everything else. And even when I was on the 4 and 5 o'clock news and did hits for the news shows there, they, you know, talked about coronavirus and said, we'll get to that next. But our top story tonight is Tom Brady is leaving Boston, leaving New England.
Because you have a good feel, obviously, being from here and then working in Boston for the last almost 8 years, can you compare Tom Brady to the adoration that any Wisconsin athlete has ever gotten, or is it so much more over the top there?
You know, I think it's. I don't think you can compare Brady to anyone. You know, I wrote a column today, sort of tongue in cheek. You know, like that. I wrote like the 5 stages of grief, and this is how we got over Brett Favre leaving, and when he went to the Vikings, and yada yada yada. And people were like angry. They were like, how could you possibly compare Brett Favre to Tom Brady? I was like, slow your roll, angry Patriots fans. I'm not saying they're the same, but you know, everybody does have like that person, that sports figure that you grow up with and you watch from the time, you know, for me with Favre, it was from early high school all the way, you know, through early into my career. And that's what it was for Brady. I mean, maybe if you were like a really big Brewers fan and you really loved Robin Yount, but he never left. And I don't know that Paul Molitor like sort of brought up those same sort of emotions. I just don't, I'm trying to even think like maybe the Michael Jordan, I would say Michael Jordan might be the closest thing. Like when he left and ended up going to the Wizards, that may have, maybe that really hit Chicago. Like this did, but I can't think of anybody else that's even on the same playing field.
You were in Pittsburgh. What about Mario Lemieux?
Yeah, hockey's different. And hockey and Mario, to the best of my recollection, and unless I'm forgetting something, forgive me, but I don't think I am because he's an owner of the team. He never left Pittsburgh. He retired, but he never left and went to play for another team. Like, to me, that's the bigger thing, right? We see legends retire all the time, and but there's something about a legend who retires with his own team and maybe, you know, chooses to go out on top. You know, if you want to use Pittsburgh as an example, you know, you look at Jerome Bettis, right? He wins that Super Bowl in Detroit against the Seahawks. And then right after they win, he announces on the field, and that was my last run. You know, the bus isn't running anymore. But when you go to another team, when you sort of scorn and say, listen, I don't want to stay where I was anymore. I want to go somewhere else. That to me is different.
All right. I think the multi-million dollar, maybe the $30 million question, because that may be what he's getting in Tampa Bay, is why couldn't Brady and Bob Kraft work this out? Did it go deeper than the two of them? Why did it come to this?
Oh, I mean, that's everything to do with Bill Belichick. Like, when we started looking back, and the reason I think a lot of writers and media members weren't shocked that he left. I mean, you're always shocked to be like, wow, it's really actually happening. We predicted this was going to happen, but it's actually happening. Is because most of us looked at the deterioration of the relationship between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady really since 2014 when they drafted Jimmy Garoppolo. And of course, people outside of New England aren't going to remember this, but Bill Belichick, when they drafted Jimmy G, stood up at the podium and said, you know, well, you look at Tom and his contract situation and his age, and at that point, everyone was like, oh, wow. And then they started 2-2 that year, had that huge loss at Kansas City where they got absolutely blown out of the water on Monday night. And one of our reporters who's now at the NFL Network said to Bill, you know, are you looking at all options at quarterback or something? I mean, it's a soundbite that gets played over and over again. And he sort of laughed it off. And then Brady, of course, went on that incredible run. They end up winning 3 more Super Bowls in the next 6 years with him. But right there, that laid the groundwork and the foundation. Like, Bill Belichick is known for getting away from a player a year early rather than a year late. And it's been bad, Doug, the past couple of years here. Like, this year with Tom Brady, I've never seen someone more miserable to be at work, at least in a job that is, you know, as fun as football and where you get paid as well to play that well to play a game. I mean, it was really the writing was on the wall. And I think even some of us in the media, like, we're 99% in, but there's that 1% that's like, no way, he'd never walk away. He would never do it. And he did it.
Who's got the bigger ego, Brady or Belichick?
Actually, I think Belichick, because I think there is some level of humility to Tom Brady. Like, Tom can at least admit, like, hey, I didn't play very well. I need to do better. I am trying to come up with a time when there is a massive mistake made on the field or a personnel decision that just completely backfired, like a la not playing Malcolm Butler in the Super Bowl against Philadelphia a couple years ago, that they ended up losing because they just could not stop the Eagles defensively. And to this day, he will not admit that that was a bad decision. He will not tell anyone why he, you know, didn't play Malcolm Butler. I'm going to go with Bill having the bigger ego.
How much does Tom Brady have left in the tank at the age of 43 when the season starts?
You know, it's actually hard to tell, because the pieces around Brady the past couple of years, and this was another reason that he was just tired of playing in New England. You know, he kept taking less money, less money, less money, with the expectation that they would put good pieces around him. And they just didn't. Like, they never brought in, after Aaron Hernandez was charged with murder and then convicted of murder and released from the team, they never brought in really a suitable second tight end to run alongside Rob Gronkowski, a player who was hurt a lot. You know, and even at the wide receiver position, like Danny Amendola leaves, Wes Welker leaves, and you place Danny Amendola, but then Danny Amendola goes, and you don't ever really get another guy that can sort of compete and be there and be a go-to guy alongside Julian Edelman. And so really the last few years, it's like everyone has been wondering, is Tom Brady slipping? Is that why the offense isn't there? Is that why his numbers are down and he doesn't quite look the same? Or is it because there aren't the pieces around him? That question is going to get answered this year, because you're going to a team with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin and Ronald Jones and Peyton Barber. And I know these aren't like, you know, I know those two running backs aren't like the best two players in the whole world, but they've got some good offensive pieces, and they were the eighth best offense last year with Jameis Winston turning the ball over 38 times, something Brady's not going to do. So we're about to find out if Tom Brady what he still has left in the tank.
Who do you think at the end of the day is going to regret Tom Brady moving on more? Is it going to be the Patriots? Is it going to be Brady, or neither one of them?
I actually think it might be the Patriots, because I do think that Brady can, even if he is, you know, a step or two above being a game manager at this point, he's such a smart quarterback that I could see him going to Tampa and doing something like what Peyton Manning did in Denver after he left Indianapolis, and then putting pieces around him and him fitting in that. To find them finding a way to work the scheme around him just well enough that he's able to succeed there. The Patriots, they are not set up to be good. I mean, not only did they lose Tom Brady, they also lost Daron Harmon. They lost Kyle Van Noy. They lost Jamie Collins. I mean, they're losing some key pieces on defense. And if you look at that offense, who do you have? James White and Julian Edelman are arguably their two best players, and Julian Edelman's going to be 34 this year and is hurt all the time. You also have Sony Michel, who had a down year last year. He might bounce back, but you don't know who you're going to have at quarterback. No one really knows what Jarrett Stidham is going to be. You lost Ted Karras, an offensive lineman who is at center this year for David Andrews, to free agency. You lose pieces on defense. And they have not drafted well. They have no tight ends, unless you're really familiar with Matt LaCosse and Ryan Izzo. I mean, it's – and again, that's part of why everyone's like, why would Brady want to stick around? Why would he want to – you know, why is he wanting to play with, like, the Philip Dorsetts of the world, the Jacoby Myers and N'Keal Harry, a bunch of young kids who haven't proven anything yet? It's really – it's – We could have a really interesting year this year. When I say interesting, I mean like dumpster fire.
I asked you to compare Tom Brady to like a Milwaukee athlete, if there or a Wisconsin athlete, if there could be any comparison. But let's turn it back on Boston for a second, because when you think of the great sports cities in America, I think Boston's right at the top of everybody's list objectively. And you've got legends like Ted Williams and Bill Russell, Larry Bird, Bobby Orr. I mean, that's a pretty good list of legends right there. And maybe it's hard to do because there are different eras that are involved, different sports that are involved. But how do you compare Brady against those guys as best as you can?
I mean, I don't want to misquote Dan Shaughnessy here, but I'm fairly certain that when we've had this conversation, like even an old curmudgeon like Shaughnessy has said that it's hard to not put Brady at the top of the list. And I don't know if that's just part of because even when you're an old curmudgeon like Shaughnessy, you know, what have you done for me lately is always right in the front of your mind. But he really is. I mean, he resurrected a franchise, right? Like the Celtics were always really good in the NBA, even before Russell, even before Bird. Like each of them sort of kind of carried on the success from a prior generation. You know, I know it's going to sound kind of crazy, but to me, that's a closer comparison to Brady is David Ortiz in terms of just at least this generation of fans and, you know, this. I would say from everyone that would be like our age group, which is somewhere between Gen X and millennial, all the way down to Gen Z, they've never known losing and they've only known winners. And when you think of just a huge personality and people really being enamored with someone, David Ortiz is right up there as well. And I think it's more because of his big personality, but, and also what he did on the field. But for Brady, again, other than Jordan, who has won 6 championships with one team? I mean, they had a dynasty for 2 decades. Like, not the Cowboys of the 90s didn't do it. The Niners of the 80s didn't do it. The Packers of the 50s and 60s didn't do it. Not even the Steelers of the 70s. Like, all of them were good for a decade and then had a long downtime. They haven't. Since he stepped on the field for Drew Bledsoe, they never looked back. It's astonishing. Like, it's almost hard to like wrap your brain around even when you're like right in the middle of it.
Yeah, it's hard for us in Wisconsin. I can only imagine what it's like for fans in New England. Trenti Kuzderek from NBC Boston joining us here on 94.5 ESPN. Well, good luck with the social distancing. Good luck with the doing television from your living room. I know some.
I gotta clean and I gotta get some fresh flowers. Those are the 2 things on my list right now because I got like a dirty wine glass. Like my roses are dead. The water's kind of yellow. I'm like, I just got some avocado. I don't know what I'm gonna do.
You need a set designer. That's what you need to bring over. A set designer.
I also need like some good lighting. Like, is my lighting in here good? Am I gonna have shadows on my face?
It's a whole thing. I prefer radio lining. It works better for me.
Yes. Be much easier.
And hopefully when you're back into town, the social distancing won't be a thing again.
Yeah,
so
we can all hang out again.
Yeah, that would be nice because we can't hang out with anybody anymore because these are the times that we live in. Trenti Kuzderek from NBC Sports Boston. Trenti, always good to catch up with you. Hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Stay healthy, everybody.
I guess that turned out pretty well for Tom Brady, who wants to keep on chugging with the Buccaneers. He's going to be, what, 44 this season? 7 rings now and counting. As I like to say, this last one with the Buccaneers, he'll get that one fitted for the middle finger to Bill Belichick, apparently. He can drive by his house and say, hey, look, the Buccaneers were number one. That's it for the show. We're off until Monday, hopefully talking about the Badgers in the Sweet 16, but the odds, not that great with potentially Baylor standing in their way. But as always, you can hit us up on our socials. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Doug Russell Pod. You can shoot us an email, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. Search for us on Facebook and on YouTube. And for all of that in one very convenient place, very simply, www.DougRussellPod.com. That's where you can download all of our shows as well. Have a great rest of your week. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.